I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Pretty poor week on the weather front, pretty typical for the time of year, but building frustration, I'll say, at farm level, given the cumulative impact of all the rain in February and now into March. Let's live in hope. This week I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan once again. First up is the quick fire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868 366 6465. Adam, a couple of quick fires here to you first, please. Hi all. Could Adam explain where ICBF are getting 450 kilos as optimal mature cow weight? Are they using Jersey cows as a benchmark for the suckler sector? Where is the research to back up such a low mature cow body weight? Is it 450, Adam? Is that what ICBF
Yeah,
suggested? I thought he was holding at 690 or something.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not optimal. That's the floor. So basically, maybe there's a bit of confusion there. Even if a cow was sort of 350 kilos or 360 kilos mature weight, so this is where the Dexters are coming out of. She was being rewarded for that very light weight, being a suckler cow at that very light weight. But they've introduced a floor now of 450. So 450 is basically below that, no cow gets any more benefit. But they're still saying there's benefit to go to 450, I guess. But it's not the optimal, I suppose, as that maybe question would point to. It's more like maybe 650 or whatever, or heading for 700 is what they're saying. They want a whole cow weight at that. But the reason 450 is there, that, you know, a minimum spec carcass of 230, 240 wouldn't be achievable under that.
Okay, perfect. We'll come back to that probably later on in the show. Second question, Adam. Interesting to hear about the mature cow weight debate. The results from that Newford herd wouldn't back up performances from a lighter cow, and there has been no results from the herd in Grange, as far as I can see. Seems to make no sense. Just tease that a little bit for me.
Yeah, sure. It's probably a similar question. Look, there's a massive amount of frustration in the West, Jack. We have a lot of continental cows, and you've maybe heavier cows than maybe other parts of the country, and are doing very well and breeding very well. And they feel that they're trying to be done away with in terms of those cows. And there probably is a happy medium, Jack. You couldn't say that maybe, you know, 900 kilos, 1,000 kilo cows, that maybe the future probably isn't with them either. But I definitely wouldn't like to see our cow weight go down, because especially on the pedigree side of things, because you're breeding the next generation or whatever of pedigree bulls to breed, we'll say, to go on. I'm not too sure where this is going to go. I know this week, and we'll talk about the main show as well. The frustration is building there, yeah.
Yeah, I'll come back to you. Excellent. We'll just whip through the quick fires. Darren, a couple of quick fires here for you. Lads, Budget Day saw the announcement of a 70% grant for farmers who import slurry and want to build more storage. Any update on this scheme, or when might it open for applications?
Yeah, unfortunately, Jack, no update on that. I think it's probably delayed with the IT sort of issues around the acres, TAMS. I think that's all pretty much the one section. We were hearing some talk that they're looking at it, and they're looking at, say, a spec for it, or an application system for it, but there's been nothing yet on it.
Is that specifically for the tillage farmers, Darren, or is it for all farmers?
It could be for all farmers. Anyone that's important slurry, so it's targeted for important slurry. But you'd imagine tillage farmers would be one of the big cohorts who would avail.
Yeah, it's not going for those that are highly stocked that are kind of in trouble with the derogation. Excellent. Yeah, Darren, hi. I've applied for grant for cattle shed under Thames Tree Animal Welfare and Nutrition Storage Scheme. Got a farm visit on Monday. Three people arrived on farm, took measurements of existing sheds, hay shed also measured, depth of nutrients and measured new shed. Is this standard protocol and do you know how long we'll be waiting for answer back?
So it's one of three things, Jack. So it's either a new inspector or a new, say, officer being trained up, and or a couple of officers being trained up and coming out, say, with a seasoned inspector on it and learning the ropes. It's either an internal sort of review or audit of it here. So sometimes you'll see that where instead of, say, just one person going out, you'll have an Irish sort of audit of, they have to review or audit so many files. Or in a rare situation, I wouldn't think this would be it. You might get someone from the European Commission or someone from sort of reviewing it, but like that'd be generally, I'd say, more than three people, and I'd imagine the department would be giving an update to the person coming out, or they'd be a bit more about it. So I'd say it's one of the first two, Jack. And like it shouldn't delay the application or the anymore. Like if the listener is or viewer is more concerned, what they could do is just contact their local DVO, the local AES office who's looking after it, just to see where the file is at.
Excellent. Now, hi Darren, beef farmer here. I've just been told I won't get paid organic payment on any land which is in the acre scheme. For example, 8-hectare parcel with a half a hectare of a riparian zone. My understanding from my advisor was it would be just the half hectare not eligible or not paid. My original 25 hectares in organics is down to 12 hectares. If these are the rules, is it not completely ridiculous? I will be pulling out of organic if this is the case. The department has shown from my dealings with them in the last 2 years to be incompetent and unaware of basic reality. This is the end of farming for me, as all the schemes and rules just make it impossible to farm when all any farmer wants to do is get paid for their produce and not be relying on schemes. Frustrated to see the least. Thank you. Darren, cross organic farmer. So he's cut on his area based on the fact it's part of acres and can't be in the organics. Is that right?
Yes, and I'm sorry to say, Jack, I have no brighter prospects on this. So where this comes back to is that it's say the double funding. So any parcel that is in, say, availing of an acres payment can't avail of an organics payment as well. So if you had, say, some areas, just say you had organics on one parcel and acres on another, you would have to forego one payment on one of them. You can't get, say, a double payment because it's called as double funding or double counting. So in that situation, what would have needed to be done is the half a hectare would have needed to be put into its own LIPIS number and the new LIPIS number put in for the rest of that parcel. As far as I'm aware now, I'll look up and I'll talk to, I'll want to buy a couple of consultants, but as far as I'm aware, that's what would have needed to be the case, is that it would have needed to be separated out to allow the acres to be paid in the half a hectare and the 7.5 hectares then to go into organics. Now, I'm not sure whether there's a way of appealing that.
Retrospectively going back and doing that.
There might be something, but we'll make a few calls on it and we'll talk to the organic section as well and see if there's something that can be done.
Perfecto. Aidan, two quick fires here for you. What is your opinion on multi-species swards? What are the pros and cons? Is there much advantage over a grass clover mix? Big question, Aidan, lots in it, but give us the top line. Yeah,
sure. Look, there's no harm in them any, Jack, is the first comment to make. You know, I mean, they deliver relatively high quality feed in the sense that the cows tend to like them, cattle tend to like them, they perform well in them. Lambs and young stock perform particularly well on them. That's they're the pros, I suppose. The other pro is that, of course, you have a high level of clover in the sward and legume and other legumes, so they fix a lot of nitrogen. So a lot of farmers who have the multi-species swards don't spread any nitrogen on those fields. They still need to spread P's and K's, obviously. And some of them will go with slurry in the springtime just to give it a kickstart, but it's not essential, I suppose, that it needs high levels of nitrogen. So that's a big saving. In terms of the cons, the major one for me is and the only one really is the weeds. So that's a major issue. If you're putting these into fields that have lots of dock seedlings from, you know, a dock infestation, there's no chemical treatment for that bar spot spraying. So you can't go out with a post-emergent spray on any multi-species. I suppose I should say another big advantage is that the department have announced during the week that there's a €300 a hectare top up, I suppose a scheme there for both red clover silage swards and multi-species swards that are sown this year and up to last year. So that's a big saving. That's €120 an acre, Jack. You will pay for the seed and some of the contractor costs in terms of getting that in. So that's an incentive. But look, I mean, we also have to say that they don't last that long. So the herbs will die off fairly quickly. You're talking 2 or 3 years, a lot of the herbs will be gone. So the herbs will be the chicory and plantain, they'll be gone. Your red clover will be under pressure. So all you'll be left then with is the grass swards, grass species, and the white clover.
Okay, so the piece coming back in there. We'll touch off that again, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Aidan, question on collars for Aidan. Can I submit a TAMS application and then buy collars? Is any of the investment eligible for VAT refund? Thank you, love the show. Collars, TAMS, Aidan.
Yeah, so that to me would be a risky strategy, Jack, because there was, if you look at the last two tranches that were open for TAMS applications, the minister came out subsequent to the deadline closing and said that all eligible items will get paid. Now, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen this time around. So, you know, for me, you would want to wait until you get approval really before you go off and make the investment if you're relying on the grant in order to help to pay for it. That's I think my advice on it. In terms of the VAT element of it, there's no element I think you're going to get the VAT back on, because it's not part of a building. So unless the base station won't be eligible because it's not part of a new building. It's my understanding of it anyway. So I'd be banking on not getting any VAT back, and I suppose I'd be waiting if you're relying on the TAMS to get the until you hear more from the department before you go away and buy it.
Adam, let me come to you. Listen, I suppose we start with the positives, Adam. Decent week again for exporters. In terms of those selling weanlings for exporters, there's big demand. It remains a very positive market if you're selling into selling weanlings at the moment.
Yeah, so look at the Marpids analysis, Jack. That's the big gauger every week for the trade. You know, like in terms of that's thousands of animals across marts all across the country coming into a combined database that we can analyse every week. So when you hear of, you know, cattle being a good trade and a manager maybe talking about a good trade and maybe a seller talking about a bad trade and a buyer talking about a good trade, really that page in the journal and in the paper every week, that's the definitive of what the trade is. And I mean, you always look for green arrows in that trade, because green arrows has gone up in price and red arrows have gone down. It's full of green arrows this week, which is always a good sign. And particularly the Weanland Bull Ring. The Weanland Bull Ring is up €70 a head this week, which is a massive lift, 20 cent a kilo. And you know, top end, what I call them in terms of 300 to 400 kilo weanlings, that's the most amount of weanlings we have in that database. They're up about 384 a kilo of an average this week, just knocking on the door of €4 there, which is a massive price. And in terms of 350 kilo weanling this week, through the average in terms of that top end is up at sort of 1344, I think, or somewhere between 13 and 1400, which is really, really positive. And look at numbers, I guess, aren't as high as they are in the autumn. And a lot of people would have taken the money maybe back autumn time in terms of good trade, and maybe weanlings are a little bit less in supply now, and that's probably helping the trade as well. But
yeah,
exporters, three of the big exporters really going at other this week in a couple of marts.
Yeah, so they're looking to fill their contracts, fill the boat, like, and get the stock together. Like, I have a buddy, Adam, that's going to test your theory on this now. He's going to go to the market. Like, he weighed his couple of weanlings there during the week, and he reckons he's 420 on average, all bulls, Charlie type, suckler bred type animals, and he's going to give him a rattle. So we'll see if you're right this week. And even if he gets 420, Adam, kilos, I'll say, and let's say he gets the average of what you were saying there in a tree at coming. At 420 or 380, he's hitting for 1600 for those handful.
Hard to see Anton in that, isn't it? Like, look, that's probably top. We break it down to top end average and
yeah,
and probably poor. Like, poor is Frisians and dairy beef, and middle end is your probably good or great Charlie or limousine. And then the top end probably is there's bits of blues coming in there, really, maybe throwing up them figures. So,
what are you telling me?
You're saying 384. I'm saying maybe
I thought you said that was the average bulls.
No, I don't know that. I don't know that man, and I don't know that person.
Oh, no, sorry, I appreciate that.
I haven't seen the cattle, so I'm not buying the blame, but maybe a little bit back of 384, possibly.
Okay. Well, we'll still test it. But look, at either way, whether he's 1400, 1500, or 1600, to hold on to them, Adam, for a year, get them in to kind of the 400-kilo carcass that he says he can do, you know what I mean, kind of fairly regularly, like, and feed them up to that, like, I mean, japers, it would take a fair price next spring to be able to deliver this 1500 or 1600 they can get today.
I would, and that's I guess why you've seen, you know, 350 weans in a fin last Monday in terms of a big sale for the time of year, and a 98% clearance rate along with that, you know, in terms of people selling. So I think you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, and you see the trade, and if it makes sense to sell, you sell, and that's it.
Okay, nice one. Impact on the beef trade, Adam. Is that kind of underpinning it, or is that making it?
I don't know. Have we the ability to cut back and cut in comments from last week's show? But I'm nearly sure I said last week we had a question in for a guy holding cattle, and I think I said to hold them. Now maybe we could go back and get that.
Adam, one quick fire in here for you. Question for Adam: have heifers about 550 to 570 traditional breeds? Some could be hung up, but also some would carry more weight. I'm getting a bit anxious that factories could drop price like last year. Would you feed on or pull the plug on them? Up to 570 kilos, Adam, traditional Hereford or Black
Steppers. Yeah, they're probably coming close, Jack, but I think I'd feed on at the minute for another couple of weeks. Anyway, even 2-3 weeks, I'd only take the chance, because I think this thing will turn based on numbers. Numbers are going to get tight, I think, and factories are just pulling back to get going again, if you know what I mean. They'll pull back maybe 10 cents. So that's 2 weeks in terms of 5 cent raises when it starts to go again. So I'd be happy enough to feed on for another couple of weeks there. Yeah. But it has steadied. I know this will probably come back to bite me at some stage in the future in terms of where I tell the hole and the price goes down. But it has steadied. €5 base for bullocks last week. And we were sort of saying, no, it's going to come 505 and 510 back up for bullocks this week, and 515 for heifers. And look, I heard the price is up at 530 for heifers this week in terms of loads of heifers. Kill gone down 760 head. Cow killed in very, very, very strong. We're still up 2,000 on the same week last year at cows. A lot of them P1 cows. But prime cattle coming tight. And that's good, and it's good to see. And I think you'll see more of that. And plus, Borby at the very beginning of the year said we'd have a 40,000 reduction in the kill in 2024. We're actually up 17,000 at the moment for the first 8 weeks or whatever, 9 weeks of the year. So that means there's a 60,000 swing, if you know what I mean, for the rest of the year in terms of we have to go down that 17 and we have to go down the 40 that Borby are saying. So that bodes well, I think, for the rest of the year.
And is it fair to say if these exporters are cleaning up kind of, and I'm sure they're cleaning up cattle that'll be killed later on this year now, you know, I mean, that again, that's, you know, there's extra activity in that market, it's fair to say, isn't it? And that'll tidy it up another bit. Like,
there's talk on the ground that there's one exporter signed a deal for 7,000 weanlings for the next load to go to Turkey. You know, they're all buying for North Africa. There's the Shorthorn Express is docked in Greenore at the moment, looking to load for North Africa. I think that's going to Morocco. So it's all very positive. Disease restrictions, Jack, across Europe, Spain and France in particular, that's heading those customers to Irish shores to look for cattle. So, you know, maybe it's an ill wind that doesn't blow some good, but maybe longer term it mightn't be there. So it's just, but look, we'll take it when we can get it.
Talk to me about ICBF and I suppose the row over the stars that's still ongoing, Adam. Like it seems to be kind of still, it's still they're still at war between the various different factions between the breeders and ICBF and I suppose those selling bulls and those AI stations. Like there's a lot going on there still.
Yeah, and to be honest, I thought this would be put to bed at this stage. I suppose the stakeholder grouping coming together twice and there's a bit of confusion there now, and there's a lot of frustration creeping in that nothing really has happened there, that be stakeholders in terms of they've got commitments to look at things, but there's no real action and no real action on changes. The big one now is these bulls, I suppose, that was eligible for SCEP last September. November changes and they're not eligible now. So pedigree breeders are up in arms about this and they look for a change. And to be honest, it hasn't been managed greatly by the department and ICBF. So there was a meeting on the 22nd of February. They said they'd stay inside the meeting that day until they got an answer on this bull issue. They postponed that at the end of the meeting and they said they'd reconvene the following Tuesday. They postponed the Tuesday meeting until the following Friday. On Thursday evening, they got a text message out to say the meeting on Friday was going ahead. 3 hours later, at 9 o'clock that night, they got another text message to say, no, the meeting is a sensitive stage in terms of negotiations with the bull thing. So, look, I understand now that there isn't going to be a solution to that bull issue. So you have a lot of very frustrated people out there, farmers and even Pedigree Breeders Council coming out this, which is quite a strong statement from them in the paper this week, saying that, communication, we were promised communication would be better. Like Sean Coughlin came out and held his hands up at the beginning of this and said, look, we haven't communicated with farmers good enough, we'll communicate better. They're saying now that communication has actually disimproved over the last 2 weeks with ICBF, which isn't a good place to be. So
is that fair, though, Adam? Given that they've had a couple of meetings,
I think
it's not going their way. They're kind of
I suppose, but I think they're talking in the last 2 weeks as regards there was a promise for that meeting to be on the following Tuesday. It was postponed to the Friday, and then it was postponed again. And I suppose there's been no. They said they've had no contact with ICBF in during that time. So there's just a lot of frustration out there, and Nevin McKeown and Society out there this week as well, saying that he's very frustrated with the direction I was going. I suppose you've two pieces, Jack. You've SCEP and you've the direction of breeding. And I suppose maybe we're getting caught up in SCEP and meeting SCEP guidelines, whereas the other maybe possibly more important.
If it turns out that you're right and there's no changes to the bulls, Adam, in terms of the SCEP eligibility, I call it, kind of a way. I mean, so does that mean then the AI companies have got their kind of bit of a lift from the SCEP eligibility in terms of sires that were that had the stars, we'll say, when they were signed up to the SCEP, that they'll get in, but the pedigree breeders that are selling stock bulls, that they're not going to get that.
Their argument is that the females have got a lift because the cows that were putting calf to bulls in good faith, that progeny are going to be okay and they're going to be SCEP eligible, even though there are maybe only two stars on the new index, they're still going to be SCEP eligible. AI bulls are the same in terms of meeting since the previous July, I think it is, for scheme year two, which we're going into, but the bulls haven't got a leeway on, and I suppose pedigree breeders maybe feel a little bit aggrieved at that they don't they don't get a bit of leeway on their side of the house.
Sucker focus this week, Adam, lots in it.
We've got SCEP, obviously, a recap on SCEP as regards what the conditions are and maybe what those changes mean for farmers as well. Kieran Milley's a lovely piece on, I suppose, delayed turnout, which is really impacting things.
Maybe you never turn out with the first of May.
Well, no, in certain parts of the country, I'll say, as regards turning out and, managing things. And we have a little bit of management as well about straw. I was in the West this week and, straw gone to €55 for a 4x4 round bale. So it's quite expensive, but it needs to be used at calving and lambing. But few management tips there on that. And actually Martin Merrick was out with Ken Gill, a lot of talk about organics. Ken Gill is a signpost farmer in Chagas, and Martin went round with him, and it's a lovely article, and just going through sort of some of the positives of what Ken Gill sees in his organic system. And he's not, we talk a lot about impact and output on farms, but it hasn't had an impact on Ken Gill's farm. So it's an interesting read this week in the Suckler Focus.
Okay, nice one. I'll finish up on the calf trade, Adam. I'll touch off it with Aidan again. But from your perspective, from what you're seeing from some of the reports that you have in the business of farming section, is it obviously the impact of the boats is definitely you know, depending on, and that varies from mart to mart, depending on the time of the week, really, that mart is. Isn't that fair to say? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And getting those slots, and I've heard of people this week getting phone calls in the morning of a mart saying, no, stand off there. There's not going to be a boat tomorrow. There's not going to be a boat on Friday. It's that. It's just on a knife edge there, I suppose, all the time as regards those boats going. Look at it. The trend is very, very clear, Jack, in terms of that 50, 60 kilos mark, you know, and actually it doesn't matter what color the calf is. If it's under 50, 60 kilos, and it could be a Hereford or an Angus, and it's still not making, you know, we said decent money if it's below that weight. So there's a clear message going back there, I think, to farmers saying, look, we want 50, 60 kilo calves, and if we don't, there isn't a market there for them. Probably black and whites, I think, you know, in terms of Tommy, I think was on McCroom this week, between probably 5 and 50, depending on in terms of weight and in terms of quality. The farmer's calf, maybe that we call them, maybe that bit of a stronger calf, definitely more money for them. I've seen Frisian bull calves making 100 in some of the marts this week, but they're good, straight, you know, good strong calves.
Okay, excellent. Adam, leave it at that. Chat to you next week. Go off there and swing the chariot. Darren, tell me, you opened the acres gate a little bit wider.
Yeah, just defied expectations, Jack. I think it probably defied everyone's expectations, because the minister had said so many times that there was only 4,000 places available, and that was reiterated in I suppose, despite a lot of pressure coming on after. And the announcement this week, for people that haven't heard about it, is that, say, the 9,000 or 9,200 odd applicants are all going to be accepted. So similar to what was accepted, say, in tranche one, everyone that is eligible is accepted in, and bring it up to about 55,000 applicants.
And Darren, is this possible because they know that there's a big fall off from the 46,000 that were originally into tranche one? Do we have those numbers yet?
Yeah, we have those numbers, Jack, and there hasn't been a big fall off. Like, okay, they're still above 45,000, so okay, there still is a high participation rate in that, first cohort of farmers. I thought it might have been, say, a bit more, but no, it seems that there has been a good staying pattern. About 43,500 of those are paid, I think, and I think something like 1,700 or 1,800 yet to be paid, so it brings it over to 45,000 in that regard.
Okay, so the real additional places, in fairness, like, you know, if 50,000 between the both tranches was the expectation at the outset, we could get, you know, between 54,000 and 55,000 farmers in acres.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd be bringing in about 4,000 to between 4,000 and 4,500 extra positions, and it's good to see. Like, to be fair, we've criticised the delays. We've criticised the fact that farmers haven't known about getting into tranche one before this. And this is now finally movement on it, and farmers that have put in an application can now start to make plans. Now, look, there still is a lot on acres, Jack, that needs to be improved, like scorecards still out there. But for this week, credit where credit is due. Yeah. The 9,000 applicants are getting in.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, we've had discussions with farmers, Darren, that they, you know, in terms of especially some of those farmers in the Acres Cooperation, they still know nothing of their application or what they're to do or what their kind of the consequences of joining have been on their particular farm. You know, the results are probably not evident just yet, yeah?
Yeah, that's the big challenge. Like, any farmer in a cooperation area, the scores isn't out yet. There's no date on when the scores will be out. They'll have to come before June because that's the final payment date. So the department will need to know what way the scores are before that. But you'd hope, Jack, that those scores are out before that they're out imminently, because say the scorecards we're talking about, the actions that farmers take can have a direct influence on what way that land scores. And if we're going into well over a year into when farmers joined, there's NPI applications gone in and non-productive investment applications gone in. They didn't have oversight of scores for that, but you'd hope that at least the scores would come soon, that there can be some changes made to improve scores for next year coming, and that farmers get oversight of exactly what payment is coming.
Okay, excellent. So good on a positive, as you say, another positive story in terms of the scheme piece and trying to get more farmers in on the environmental piece. Darren, I mean, I see a piece there that you had on the inside back around farmers trying to find out if they're stocked over the threshold, 130 kilos of organic nitrogen, because if they are, they have to spread the slurry with the less machines, I call them, like with the low emissions machines. How do beef and sheep farmers know that they're stocked over that? What way does it work?
Yeah, the beef one is fairly straightforward. So if you have access to your ag food account, which everyone potentially has, now whether they have the passwords or that, but they potentially have themselves or their agent acting on their behalf has, you can log on, click on nitrogen and phosphorus statements, and that will give you a statement of what your 2023 stocking weight is, and that dictates what you have to do for 2024. So it's retrospective. Same way 2024 will say govern what you do in 2025. So that's one aspect of it. Now it's the stocking rate you have to take before you export any slurry. So it's the true amount of organic nitrogen produced on the farm. The big issue, or the big, I suppose, maybe limitation, is that's only bovine. So farmers that have significant numbers of sheep, that isn't taken into account. So if you take, for example, your lowland ewe for and her lambs, it's about 13 kilos of organic nitrogen. So every animal that you have, an average across the months has to be calculated. As far as I understand, what the department figure goes on in that if you have an inspection for nitrates or cross compliance or whatever we want to call it, it goes on the latest, say, census figure. And that if that isn't reflective of the sheep numbers, well, then you provide sheep numbers per month over the year, and it's calculated on the average then of the average number, say, per month is the average over the year, and that's what you work off. So okay. there's quite a bit of work into it. Like if you have to calculate, say, your lowland ewes and lambs, or hill ewes and lambs, your lowland hoggers or your hill hoggers, and that rings true, say, for horses, donkeys, say, poultry, it is complicated enough of a system. So we're getting a good few queries from farmers that would generally, when they look up their bovine results, that are anywhere from sort of 100 to 130, depending on how many sheep they have as well, and they're trying to get an estimate or trying to get a figure on to see whether they're over or under. Because as you said, if you're over the 130, it has big implications this year.
Complicated is fair to say. And Darren, am I right in assuming that a lot of the suckler and sheep guys wouldn't have a less machine, you know, that they wouldn't have invested in that because they wouldn't have enough of work for it to do, and typically they have their own little bit of a slurry tanker and they tip away at it there during the summer. Is that am I right in that assumption?
Yeah, it would be for a cohort, Jack. Now, like a lot would be relying on contractors, but there would be a significant cohort that would have say a small slurry tanker, as you say. So there is a bit of concern or a bit of intrigue around whether you're still on the right track. For most, it'll be if they have that, they'll probably, what they'll do is move to getting a contractor to spread it, as opposed to investing in a trailing shoe or less equipment. Sorry, I'm saying trailing shoe, but the equipment. And I know there is some that have put in a TAMS application on the back of it, maybe for a small tanker. I was talking to Peter Thomas Keaveney, and he said this. Reports indicate there's a good few applications, or there's a good few inquiries with merchants for maybe tankers 1600 gallon to 2000 gallon with maybe 6 or 7.5 meter trailing shoe on the back. The big aim here is trying to keep the weight low, because a lot of them smaller tankers, the reason why some people have it is they're maybe traveling on more marginal ground and they want to try and not put too much extra weight on either.
Correct, yeah. Right, leaving the schemes, Darren, talk to me about the hoggets. They're flying it. The price is still flying it, yeah.
Yeah, Jack. It's great for anyone that has any hoggets to sell. I was in Aton Ryemark myself on Monday, and there was a farmer we were talking, and he was saying that Genie, if only he had a few hoggets to sell, but he made the point that he sells a lot of his hoggets to stores, to be lambs at that stage. And he said, look, even if he's not directly making it at the moment, that hopefully the store land finisher or the specialist finisher, the fact that he or she is getting a few quid now for their efforts will hopefully leave that trade stronger again in the back end. But to get back to the nuts and bolts of it, quotes this week above €8 a kilo, like really the value of Kildare is, like we've talked about it before, but 15 cent ahead of quotes again this week. First plant to quote €8 a kilo plus 10 cent quality assurance. It's keeping the pressure on every other plant, Jack, to increase 40 cent of a lift in the space of a week when other plants would have come up anywhere from 15 to 25 cents. So, like, yeah. It's they're setting the barometer. And when or if the deal goes through at Dawn, there'll be some eyes on the performance over the next year to see whether that has implications for prices and whether the competition authority was right in granting the approval there. The live trade, I should say, Jack, so the €8, €8.10, there isn't many hoggets, if any, at this stage moving below €8. And then you're looking anywhere from 8 sort of 15 to 25 for groups, say 30 and upwards of 840, and higher prices being quoted for specialist finishers agents. And like the one thing I've been saying for the last few weeks is there's a myriad of prices going within factories, even within factories, never mind say Kildare versus the rest of the factories. There'll even be a significant price between what the traders at the top end of the market are getting in Kildare and what someone coming in with low numbers is getting. And if you're that person that's coming in with low numbers or this can't say negotiate with them, well, the market is booming, Jack. Like over €200 paid. Now, it's the talking point of the week, over €200 paid. It's not fair to reflect to say that that's the going rate. But if you look at any of the markets in the last week, there'll be 20 to 30% of sheep selling between 190 and 200. Like, so yeah. Ahead of factory prices. Right. And like it has to be farmers only selling sheep once. Make sure you're getting the most for them.
Okay. Darren, any other bit of a lambing update for me? Any bit of hardship, or is the weather hardship enough on you? Like, yeah,
it's the weather that's hardship enough, Jack. That anyone that starts a lambing seems to be going okay. Weather creating complications, getting sheep out, and a nice bit of feeding going on immediately after lambing, which you'd say is wise given where weather is, given where grass utilization is. Now, look, there is plenty of people that are on maybe very good quality land that is dry, grass utilization is good. And in those cases, it's just a matter of getting sheep out and acclimatized, and they'll work away to sound without meal supplementation. But where yours are in poor condition or grass utilization is questionable or quantity is tight, well, then a small bit of supplementation will go a long way in keeping putting sheep on the right track.
Okay, sweet job, Darren. I'll leave it at that for this week. Thank you for that. Aidan, are you suffering from the same hardship as Darren is?
Yeah, sure. It's a knock-on effect, Jack. I mean, I was looking at it there, and I think I said to you before that, you know, it's normal weather in February, but when I look back at the rainfall, it was between 1.5 and 2 times.
Did someone question your normality? They did, like, yeah.
It wasn't. I had to put my own hands up on this one. So, you know, I mean, it was like February was particularly wet, and the early part of March has been difficult as well. You know, yeah. It's been with snow in many places and then bits of rain here and there, but I suppose I'm writing the paper this week and I'm saying the biggest benefit now is the season. And what I mean by that is that longer daylight hours, you've much better drying conditions. Like it's bright now much earlier than it was even 2 weeks ago. You know, it seems to be kind of an exponential increase in daylight hours. Yeah. And you're going to get these drying winds in March, Jack. You know, an easterly wind will blow and land will dry out much quicker than farmers expect, even after rainfall. So the damage from 10 mil rain 3 weeks ago would have been, you know, would have stopped lads for a couple of days. But, you know, you'll get away with that now much, much easier over the next couple of weeks. So, don't lose heart. It's still early in the season. There's an opportunity now if you go hammer and tongs at grazing, you know, and these dry days are ideal for it. Go hammer and tongs, go into your low covers. This is presuming now that you've no grazing done or little or no grazing done up to now. I would say that, you know, aim to get 50% of the farm grazed as soon as possible and then slow down. Because by slowing down at the end of March and early April, you're giving that land that you've grazed early on a chance to recover and have enough grass back in the second rotation to sustain that, you know, a 21-day round length. Because the biggest mistake that most farmers make, and this is what would have happened in the past, been said before extended grazing became the norm, is that you'd have a very short second rotation because you'd have too much, you'd have to skip out of your first rotation because the covers have gone too strong. Then you haven't enough ground in your second rotation to sustain a 21-day or, you know, 19 or 21 days. So you're into a situation then where you're going to have to go back in and graze some of the ground that was closed for silage, which is a disaster. And it leads to, when I say disaster, you're going to covers at 2000 in at peak yield, you know, so it is a disaster from that point of view, but I suppose it's there, it's feed, it's on the farm. So you want to avoid those kind of things happening because that really kills protein percentage. But look, I'm ahead of myself there. I mean, the main thing for the moment now, Jack, is to, just to get cows out the grass, reduce the workload, get grass into them, reduce the amount of silage in the diet.
And Aidan, like if it does pick up and like let's assume it gets some little bit better, and as you say, the season has come on with us. I mean, it's a case of getting calved cows out day and night, kind of, you know, if normally you might have stayed in till the kind of end of March, you could, given the I'll say given the grass that's there, and I think maybe I'm wrong, but it looks as if the grass is there, and I suppose with the delayed turnout and all that, it should be there. Is it fair
to say? And it was earlier housing than normal as well, Jack. So there was a carryover from last autumn as well in terms of more grass on farms. But you're 100% right. Like, I mean, this notion of letting cows out by day and even in by night, that's, you know, when there is plenty of grass available, for me, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, cows aren't afraid of the dark. So they're fine outside, like, you know, and if they're not going to do damage during the day, they're not going to do damage during the night, all other things being equal. So this idea of bringing them in because it's cold or it's dark, like, for me, it doesn't make any sense, like, because, you know, they're out day and night in the middle of summer. So why aren't they out day and night when they can be in and weather suitable in March?
Yeah.
Okay, look, farmers are afraid of cows getting chills and all the rest. Probably more likely going to happen if they're inside in a shed that's drafty. So they'll find the shelter out the field. They'll huddle together if it's cold. You know, they'll manage, like, so just keep them out day and night. And that's for farmers, obviously, you know, that have very little grazing done to date and are behind in target. There is a cohort, and I mean, Declan Collins, our dairy specialist, was out in the farm in Kilkenny during the week, and it's in the paper yesterday's paper, and he, you know, did 40-something% grazed, you know, so well on track in terms of area grazed. I'd say a good bit more damage done than normal, you know, and that's kind of reflective, and from anyone I'm speaking to that has a lot of area grazed. But they just need to manage their covers now. They want to be walking the farm regularly, comparing to the budget, sticking to their area planner, because you don't want to be going ahead of yourself and having to feed silage, we say, in 2 weeks' time because they're gone too far. So just be careful, you know, those ones need to be a little more conservative.
Are costs going to be up, Aidan, as a result? Sorry for cutting across you. Are costs going to be up, do you reckon, you know, on farms, with, you know, especially, I call it the heavy farms, you know, I mean, there's still a good proportion of milk produced on heavy soiled farms, like on where it's not as quick to get out grazing. Like, costs are going to be up and like, you know, is it fair to say that it's kind of a break-even situation again?
Yeah, now it's hard. It's early to say. I was looking back over like last year's weather, you know, and February was an exceptionally dry month last year. So you'd say costs were down in February last year. So if you compare the two, you'd say costs were well up. But the rainfall in March was cruel last year. I mean, it was twice the normal in many situations. So March was a very difficult month. It's a much more costly month in terms of feed going in. Rather than feeding, you know, 20-30% of the cows, you're feeding almost 100% of the cows. So that's, you know, you see the meal going out in the meat feed bin much faster in March than you do in April or February. So for me, in terms of answering that question, I would say it all depends on what happens over the next couple of weeks in terms of whether costs are going to be up or not. If we get a better March, costs will be down relative to last year.
Okay, nice one. Last one, the calf trade. I touched off it with Adam, Aidan, and we were kind of concluding. And I think Tommy Miles has a piece there in the journal again this week. You know, the light calves are really getting hammered from the market in the March. You know what I mean? They're not getting the bids. They're not getting the competition from around the ring for light calves. Anything less than kind of 50 kilos. Is that kind of what you're hearing?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, it's hard to get some of those light calves up to 50 kilos. And you're shoving on now to 4 weeks, particularly if there's any hint of crossbred in it, or if it's a light-boned Frisian out of a heifer, it's a heifer, you know, calf, let's say, or a heifer that has calved. So they're always going to be lighter. And they're pushing now onto 4 and 5 weeks of age. And I suppose farmers are under pressure, Jack. You know, sheds are fairly full at this point. A lot of farmers have been delayed selling calves, maybe selling their stronger calves because of the national genotyping program. And now they're at a point where they don't care anymore and they need to sell animals. And some of those calves are coming to the market now and they're not getting much money for them. They're not getting paid for the 4 or 5 weeks of milk that's going into them, that's for sure. But it's a matter, I suppose, of some farmers feel that they need to move them. But that's a kind of a short-term thing, I would say, Jack. You know, there's a pressure on this week and last week, maybe. You know, looking ahead, calvings have slowed down. I'd say now farmers should be hanging on to those calves for a little bit longer, get them up to the 50 kilos, and they'll be paid from then in the market. At least they're going to get 50, 60 euro ahead for them, as opposed to getting 5 or 10 euros, which doesn't pay for the milk that they've been, you know, it's a, for some reason, you know what I mean? Okay, the logic is there that they're 50 kilos, a stronger calf than 45 kilos. But the difference in price probably doesn't make up the difference either between 45 kilos and 50 kilos, you know, but it's there. It's now in, you know, not everything makes sense and we just have to accept it. And, you know, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's, there is also, I suppose you could say that there's value for maybe a calf that's a little bit lighter than 50 euros. If you are a farmer looking to buy a calf, a Friesian calf or even a colored breed, that's a little bit lighter and maybe you have the time and the effort and the skill to put a bit of TLC into that calf to make sure it delivers in terms of growth rate over the next couple of weeks, you know, that'd be a lot better than spending 300 or 400 euros on a stronger calf, maybe. So look, each person have to make a decision up for themselves.
Yeah, no, horses for courses. The nitrates changes, Aidan, just give me a summary. So this news broke kind of last week in terms of, and look, we've been talking about it for weeks in terms of, I suppose, the updates to some of the kind of science to try and kind of, I call it, lessen the effect of the new nitrate derogation level. You know, just give me a quick snapshot. There was a piece there also on the kind of export and slurry, the change that was made recently.
Yeah, so I suppose in terms of the excretion rates, there's two things to bear in mind. There's a change for the young stock. So the calves now, and this was well flagged, but the calves now that are less than 3 months of age, sorry, are less than 4 months of age. So in the first 3 months, so month one, two, and three, they're counted as 1 kilogram for those full 3 months, whereas before it was 6 kilograms. So that's a help for farmers that are hanging on to calves now for a little bit longer before they sell them. They're not getting penalized in terms of nitrates for that. And I suppose my understanding from reading the communication from the Department of Agriculture is that the annual excretion rate now for a 0 to 1 year old animal will be 21 kilograms as opposed to being 24 kilograms previously. There's also a split now for the yearling. So a 1 to 2 year old animal, if it's a heifer, it's down at 55 kilograms, and if it's a bull, it's up at 61 kilograms from memory. So there's our bullock, so there's a difference there. So obviously heifers excrete less nitrogen than a bullock because they're smaller and whatever else. So that's the young stock one. The cow one is, you know, on the face of it, it's more complicated, but it's actually clear enough really when you get your head around it. Farmers who feed lower crude protein dairy concentrates will get the benefit of having lower excretion rate per cow. And that applies whether you're in band 1, 2, or 3. I'll just stick with band 2 for the moment because the majority of farmers are in that. But if you have an average of 15% crude protein over the year, your cows are now going to go from 92 kilos, which is the current figure, down to 90 kilos. If you can feed 14%, you're down to 89 kilos, which is what the figure was previously. And if you can feed at 13% on average over the year, you're down to 87 kilograms, which again is closer to the old figure of 85 than it is to 92. So there's good, I suppose, allowances there or potential there for farmers to get a lower excretion rate per cow. Now it's very difficult, Jack, to feed an average of 13% crude protein over the year. You would want to be feeding 13% concentrate all year round, really, in order to get that.
Yeah.
Because there's very few concentrates less than 13%, but there's plenty of concentrates higher than that in springtime. So if you're one of those farmers in heavier land, like, you've no choice really at the moment but to be feeding a 16 or 18% protein concentrate because there's silage in the diet. Whereas maybe if you're a drier farm like that Bannon Kilkenny that's featured in the paper that guarantees to get grass into cows every day of lactation, you'll get away with 13% crude protein, not fine.
Yeah.
But it's even in springtime. But it's, you know, it's not going to be applicable to everyone. I suppose the benefit here, Jack, is that if you're on the edge, so if you're currently at 225 or 226 kilograms of N per hectare, this might get you down under 220. Or similarly, if you don't want to be in derogation and you are at 165 before and now you're at 172, for example. This will help you in those situations without having to cull cows or take on extra land. So that's the advantage there, you know. And there's not much cost to it, I would say, in terms of compliance to this.
These changes are effective kind of immediately?
Yeah, so they said they'll backdate it for 2024. They're not going to come into the statute books, I'd say, until end of the year, but they said that they will backdate it for 2024. So, yeah.
Okay.
So for every farmer, like no more than Darren was saying earlier on, you need to sit down now and look at where you are in terms of, you know, with your advisor or whatever else, where you are in terms of average cow numbers, average stock numbers, and if, you know, and see where you're going to be before you go off and take on extra land that maybe you don't need.
Yeah. So super. So as you said, you know, I mean, there's a lot of detail there in terms of calves and cows changing because of the protein in the feed, etc. But ultimately, kind of on a farm basis, you're suggesting that, you know, it might be 6-7 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare. If you're ticking the boxes for some of these pieces, it might get those under just close that are close enough to the threshold. Might get them under.
Yeah, so I think for a farmer that stocked at one cow to the acre and you're in the middle band, it's about 4.8% of reduction in nitrogen excretion rate per hectare. So it will, you know, it means that those farmers are, you know, cow to the acre and middle band will still be allowable.
Yeah. Nice one. The other piece on the nitrates this week, Aidan, and it broke on Wednesday was the ruling from the judge on the Antashka case in terms of, I suppose, Antashka were questioning, you know, what Ireland or what the minister was doing, what Ireland were doing with the Water Framework Directive and the nitrates piece, like kind of at all really, and you know, the fact that water pollution wasn't, water quality wasn't improving, you know, really then, you know, what was going on, and they were taking a judicial review on it. I mean, the what did you pick up from, or what did you hear, you know, for, like, obviously there was a lot of information came out, but what did you pick up from Wednesday?
It's a very long judgment, Jack. I think the judge even references himself that it's the same size as a thesis, you know, a PhD thesis. So I mean, it's very long. It's hard to digest it all. The main consensus is that they're going to go back again, and he's going to break it up into different modules, which will be looking at different sections of it. So there's a couple of elements to it. There's a nitrates action program, and I suppose, which we know we've had for, you know, donkey's years at this stage. We're on our fifth nitrates action program currently, the last for a period of 4 years. And I suppose that's affecting the nitrate. That's as part of the nitrates directive, but it's also impacting another area such as the Water Framework Directive. And I suppose Antashka are questioning, you know, does the nitrates action program, is it fit for purpose? Does it, in terms of those other directives that we have in place as well? But look, I mean, I suppose it hasn't been won or lost yet. The fact remains that, I suppose, one of the things I did read in the jacket, which was interesting, is that if Antashka win this and say the nitrates action program is not fit for purpose, it actually doesn't have any impact in terms of the farmers. You know, they can't say that, you know, that farming is going to change, because the nitrates action program determines how they farm. So, yeah, look, I mean, look, you can read into, you know, there might be different passage of text that you would say it looks very bad for farmers. But look, I mean, I'm not enlightening anyone with what I'm saying here, but it's too early yet to say what way it's going to fall. They're back in court again, and we should know more next week.
Okay. Super job, Aidan. I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I think we're good for this week, and we'll catch up next week. We're also chatting to the Monaghan man milking in New Zealand next week, so that'll be interesting just to see how they're getting on in New Zealand at the moment. Obviously, has big impact on dairy markets, and the GDT. Sorry, Aidan, was down a touch during the week. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So the index are down 2.3%, Jack. And the main drop there, I suppose, was for whole milk powder and skim milk powder, which, you know, but like we've had seven auctions now. So, you know, back since the middle of November, since we, you know, it's consistently rising at each auction, which is unusual. You know, it's normally fucturating a little bit more than that. So now we're seeing a bit of a fluctuation downwards, and powders were rising all along. So look, it's not surprising, I suppose, to see a fall, and pretty steady in Europe as well. You know, more or less prices now converge, the same price in the spot market in Europe, the same price as the GDT auction result. But look, the prognosis is still relatively positive for milk price at the moment. Anyway, the ship has steadied compared to a bit of uncertainty earlier on. Yeah.
Sorry for cutting across you. Excellent. Thanks for that, Aidan. We'll chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro once again for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching and for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.